Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Katie Weaver. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak slowly, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, Jill Robbins and I start off with the Higher Education Report. We hear from college professors who say many of their students are having problems with basic math they should have learned when they were much younger. Then, Ana Mateo is here with words and their stories. This week, she looks at words and phrases that have to do with a favorite dessert, cake. After that, the next part in our series on America's presidents. Now, here's the Higher Education Report. This is a huge issue, said one college math professor. This is significant and deep, said another. They were talking about their students, who are still struggling with basic math skills 3 years after the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. Most of the students are in their first or second year in college, but when the pandemic started in 2020, they were still in high school, learning algebra or early calculus. During the pandemic, many U.S. schools closed to in-person classes and started teaching by video call. Education experts said they believed students would catch up. College professors said they hoped for a rebound by now, but it has not happened in most places. As a result, universities in the U.S. are trying to find ways to fix the problem. Some offer summer math camps. Others called on students to learn from each other, a process known as peer tutoring. Still others offer basic math classes students can take while also attending classes such as calculus.
Brian Ryder is the head of the math program at Temple University near Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. It's not that they're unprepared, he said. They're almost damaged. Ryder said he hated to say that, but they're so behind. Aaron Vork is a math instructor at Eastern Florida State College. Many of her students must take a math class to get a 2-year associate degree and move on to a 4-year college. Some are high school students who are getting college credit. She told VOA about her experience. She said some of her students did not get a good foundation in math, even before the pandemic started. Once they missed time in class, their troubles increased.
It's definitely become a lot worse since the pandemic. And what I've been told is that everyone was just being passed through while they were in high school. I have a lot of students who can't work with negative numbers. I have students who don't know what an even number is.
Vork said she cannot stop her class to teach students something they should have learned while they were in middle school. I slow down as much as I can, but I have to cover my curriculum, she said.
Diego Fonseca is a student in Northern Virginia, just outside of Washington, D.C. 19-year-old Fonseca recently finished high school. This summer, he took a math boot camp at George Mason University so he could brush up on math learning. He was one of about 100 students trying to improve their math skills. He said he did well in physics and computer science while in high school, but he did not get good scores on a math placement test for college. He wanted to take calculus, but in three tries on the test, he did not get a good enough score. He was permitted to take the test four times and wanted to do better on his final attempt. He was not having trouble with the math he learned recently, but he did not learn algebra well early in high school when schools closed in 2020. I didn't have a hands-on, in-person class, Fonseca said. He later said he had trouble with more difficult algebra. The math troubles are a problem for students at universities across the U.S. who want to study engineering and science. Many are being placed into low math classes, which means they are falling behind in their study programs. Colleges say the pandemic learning problems affected both reading and math, but math skills suffered more, and recovery has been slow. Maria Emilianenko is one of the math professors at George Mason. She said students are in difficult pre-calculus and calculus classes, and they cannot add simple fractions. Jessica Babcock is a math professor at Temple. She said she realized how big of a problem she had while grading a test last year. Nearly all her students missed what she thought was a simple question. It was a striking moment, she said. Babcock teaches a basic math class that includes materials students should have learned in their first year of high school. Before the pandemic, it had about 800 students, but by 2021, there were almost 1,400.
Education researchers say math is a hands-on subject, and it was hard to teach with students learning from home. If students moved on to subjects like geometry or trigonometry without learning algebra, learning gaps could go unnoticed for years. In addition, they say parents have an easier time helping their children with reading than math at home. Catherine Strunk is an education expert who now heads the Graduate School of Education at the University of Pennsylvania. She led a study that looked at learning problems in Michigan. She said minority students and low-income students had the most problems during the pandemic. They're the ones who are going to suffer the longer-term consequences, she said. Babcock, the Temple professor, said many students gave up on math. They did not come for help and continued getting poor grades on tests. The problems made Babcock change her class this year. The class has discussions, making students more involved in the learning process. We really want students to feel like they're part of their learning, Babcock said.
That kind of class, said Vork, may be more helpful for students who wonder when they will use algebra or other math in the future. She is part of a group of educators at her college who teach what she called real-world problems students can actually relate to each summer. If you go shopping and there's a sale and you want to figure out how much you'll be paying for an item that's 10% off, that's algebra, Vork said. After the summer boot camp, Fonseca said he chose to start his college studies at Northern Virginia Community College. In 2 years, he can move on to George Mason. He recently took the placement test again. On his final attempt, he qualified for calculus. I didn't have any expectation I'd do that, he said. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. On this program, we explore English words and expressions. we give you examples and notes on usage. Today, we talk about a delicious dessert made from flour, butter, sugar, and flavorings, such as vanilla, chocolate, or my favorite, coconut. We are talking about cake. Cake is a commonly served sweet treat at celebrations. And the word also appears in several English idioms. Back in 2022, we taught the idiom to have your cake and eat it too. This means to have the best of both worlds. You do not have to choose between two good things. Another expression is a piece of cake. This describes something that is very easy to do or finish. Because of all the sugar and butter, we probably should not eat too much cake. But it is so good. And sometimes having a lot of something good is better. That is the message of today's show. Most cakes are made up of two parts, the part made from flour and the sweet topping, or icing. Now, a cake without the sweet icing on top is already great. After all, it's made with lots of butter and sugar. It's sweet and satisfying. So the icing is not really necessary. But it makes the cake extra special. And that is the meaning of the idiom, icing on the cake. Something already good is made better by the addition of something else. If you describe something as icing on the cake or the icing on the cake, you mean that it makes a good thing even better or sweeter. Let's hear an example.
She loves her new job and her new coworkers. So, getting her own parking spot was the icing on the cake. She hates looking for parking.
The idiom icing on the cake has another meaning. It can be someone's greatest accomplishment or victory. Here is an example of that usage. He had achieved the highest level of success in the company. So his fancy new title was simply icing on the cake. We have another dessert saying that means about the same thing. Some cakes or ice cream dishes have a special topping, a sweetened cherry. So if something is the cherry on top, it is an addition that turns something good into something great.
The Taylors bought the house without even knowing it had a large garden in the back. That was the cherry on top, since they both love to garden.
Sometimes we use cherry on top when making an appeal for assistance. Let's say I really need a friend's help. I might say, "Please help me, pretty please, with a cherry on top." This specially worded appeal often does the trick, and the help comes. But just know that it can also make you sound a little desperate. And that's all the time we have for this Words and Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Anna Mateo.
I'm Dan Friedel, and you're listening to the Learning English Podcast. We just heard Anna Mateo talk about one of my favorite desserts, cake. Anna is here now, and I'm feeling hungry. Welcome, Anna.
Hi, Dan. Me too. Thanks for having me on the show. Yes, we are talking about expressions that have to do with the word cake and other sweet things.
Anna, okay, so before we get started, I need to know about your favorite cake. You said it is coconut.
Can you tell me some more about this coconut cake?
Well, Dan, it is a basic vanilla cake, but instead of water or milk, you use coconut milk in the batter. Then, the best part, you add dried coconut to the top of the icing. Dan, what about you? What kind of cake is your favorite?
Well, you might have convinced me to change my favorite to coconut cake with that description. But
you're welcome.
But for me, I always remember that when I was young, my family would go to get birthday cakes from a bakery in Cleveland, Ohio. The cakes were big and fluffy and white with white icing. And they always had these really pretty, colorful flowers made of icing on top. Those cakes were so good. And the sweet flowers were literally the icing on top.
Dan, that seems like the perfect example for this week's topic. Let's remind our listeners, though, that this phrase does not always apply to sweets and desserts. In fact, we use it for any situation that is already good, but then something else makes it even better. Here's an education example. Let's say a student gets into her first choice college. She is so excited and accepts the offer. And then she finds out that she also gets a scholarship. What? That money to go to school, or the scholarship, is the icing on the cake.
Anna, that's a good one. Getting the financial aid to go along with a great school could also be the cherry on top. I have to ask you this, Anna. Do you have any guesses as to why we have so many English expressions that have to do with sweet things?
Dan, I have been doing this show for a long time and researching the idioms for a long time. And we have so many English expressions that have to do with food. But also, other countries, I think, are the same. Many listeners write in and say, oh, we have a similar cake expression, or we say this. So I think basically food is very important to people, and we use food expressions a lot.
Well, next time I'm traveling in a foreign country, I'm going to ask some people about their favorite food expressions. And when I get home, I'll give you the full report. So, Anna, this was really fun. Thanks for joining us today. I really always enjoy working on the Learning English podcast, but getting to talk to you each week is the cherry on top.
Aw, Dan, thanks so much. It is a pleasure. I always have fun, too. I noticed you don't have your dog today. Your dog, for me, is the cherry on top. He's so sweet to see. But it's always good to chat with you, too.
I'll let the puppy know when I get home. Thanks, Anna.
Bye, Dan. Thank you.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about Calvin Coolidge. He was the vice president under Warren Harding. When Harding died suddenly, a little more than 2 years into his term, Coolidge became president. Coolidge is linked to two opposing ideas. The first idea is quiet restraint. The president's nickname was Silent Cal. He rarely took part in casual conversation. And as a leader, he often thought the best action was not to take any action. Many voters liked his cool style. Coolidge quickly earned a public image as a serious man who did not spend money or words easily. But Coolidge is also linked to a period in U.S. history known as the Roaring Twenties. In those years, the 1920s, the American economy was generally good. Many people spent money on exciting things, such as the still-new automobile, and on entertainment, including alcoholic drinks, cigarettes, and dancing. Creative expression such as jazz and Art Deco architecture became popular. Calvin Coolidge is often given credit for helping fuel the Roaring Twenties with his pro-business economic policies. But some historians caution against remembering Coolidge's business freedom policies too fondly. They say he helped create the conditions for the severe economic depression that followed his presidency. Calvin Coolidge and his sister were born and raised on a farm in the northeast state of Vermont. Coolidge spoke highly of both his parents. His father owned a store and also held local political offices. He had a public image for honesty, public service, and thrift. Young Calvin Coolidge helped his father in the store and hoped to be just like him. Coolidge also admired his mother's strong character. He was 12 years old when she died, and he wrote that losing her was the greatest grief that can come to a boy. 6 years later, his sister also died. Their deaths made young Calvin Coolidge even more serious than he already was. But Coolidge was also known for his wit, a kind of humor that often depends on wordplay or intelligence. As a student at Amherst College in Massachusetts, Coolidge became known as an able and funny public speaker. That skill helped him rise in politics. He began with lower-level offices in Massachusetts and later served as that state's governor. Along the way, he married Grace Anna Goodhue, a teacher for the deaf. She was known to be warm and social, and the couple were reported to have a loving marriage. They went on to have two sons. In 1920, the Republican Party nominated Coolidge to be its vice presidential candidate. In general, voters liked the Republican ticket. They were ready for a change after the reform policies and international engagement of Democrat Woodrow Wilson. Sure enough, the Republicans won the election in a landslide. But Coolidge did not enjoy the office of vice president very much. He had little power in the government. During meetings, he often remained silent. One summer night, he and his wife were on vacation in Vermont. His father, Colonel Coolidge, woke them up in the middle of the night with some dramatic news. President Harding had died. Reporters quickly gathered at the small farmhouse. Colonel Coolidge had not put electricity in the house, so everyone watched by the light of an oil lamp. Colonel Coolidge was a public official. He used the family Bible and a copy of the Constitution to swear in his son as the 30th U.S. president. Then the country's new leader did a very sensible thing. He went back to bed. President Coolidge believed in limited government, especially limited federal government. He permitted state and cabinet officials to decide as many issues as they could. Coolidge used his authority to focus mostly on the country's economy. At the time he took office, the U.S. was at the start of an economic boom. Coolidge tried to maintain that prosperity. He did not regulate businesses too much, and he sharply reduced taxes, especially on the wealthy. By nearly every measure, the economy grew. But the policies also widened the divide between rich and poor Americans and put the country's economy in a risky situation. More and more people began to invest their money in the stock market. Some put their dollars in dangerous investments. And business owners produced more goods than most members of the public could really afford. Increasingly, people borrowed money on credit to pay for luxury goods. At the same time, the economic situation of many American farmers was getting worse. The weather had been unusually dry in some places, and the price of food was falling. Farmers asked the federal government for assistance. But Coolidge rejected several bills that might have helped them. The bills had other problems, Coolidge reasoned, and he did not think that the federal government should intervene in the situation. So the farmers continued to suffer. But most voters remained supportive of Coolidge. Even though the president was considered a quiet person, he spoke often on the radio, appeared in a talking film, met with reporters regularly, and posed in funny costumes for photographers. He easily won election in 1924. Historians believe he could have won another term, too, in 1928. But Coolidge chose not to seek office. Some believed he was too saddened by the death of his teenaged son. Shortly after Coolidge became president, the boy had been playing tennis and slightly wounded his toe. The wound became infected. The infection spread to the boy's blood. A few days later, he died. Although Coolidge continued his presidency, he later said the joy had gone from the job. But when he decided not to seek re-election, he did not talk about his feelings. Instead, he simply wrote a note to reporters saying, "I do not choose to run for president in 1928. His Secretary of Commerce, Herbert Hoover, was elected instead. Coolidge retired to his home in Massachusetts and led a quiet private life. President Coolidge was well-liked by most Americans. Later presidents, including Ronald Reagan, sought to follow some of his economic policies. But many historians have questioned those policies. They say that Coolidge did not pay enough attention to the situation of farmers. And they say the stock market was rising too fast. 7 months after Coolidge left office, the U.S. economy collapsed. The country was still deep in the Great Depression when Coolidge passed away. He died, quietly, of course, during an afternoon nap at the age of 60. His will was but a single sentence. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's the Learning English podcast for today. Thank you, Kelly, for that report. And thanks to our VOA colleagues for their work on today's program.
Most importantly, thank you for listening. For more, visit our website at learningenglish.voanews.com. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Dan Friedel.